Let's welcome sports commentator Dana Johansson. Hi, Dana.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Dana is Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport. We spoke earlier in the week just ahead of the release of the Cycling New Zealand and High Performance Sport New Zealand report into matters prompted again by the sudden death, the shocking death and suspected suicide of the top athlete Olivia Podmore. And just to remind people, there had been an earlier 2018 report into the culture and into certain matters at Cycling New Zealand that had directly referenced, in fact, Olivia Podmore's story was at the centre of that. Just pick up on this latest report, what you made of it, Dana, and of the promised changes.
Yeah, it was another withering examination of Cycling New Zealand and the wider high-performance system, and we're getting quite used to reading these damning reviews into high-performance environments around the country, and we're getting used to hearing, of course, these promises of transformative action. So I think there's a real sense of scepticism, I guess, against whether there will actually be meaningful changes out there. Obviously, the death of a young athlete, I can't think of a more compelling reason for change, but I guess there were some quite worrying signs at that press conference on Monday. After Mike Heron and Sarah Lieberman presented their findings, we heard from Raylene Castle and Cycling New Zealand chairman Phil Holden. And, you know, while they were up there sort of talking about, you know, having a renewed commitment to transparency and accountability, already some of their actions are suggesting something else. I mean, on one hand, Holden was sort of talking up his that they accept the report findings in their totality. On the other hand, he was talking about the hiring of Kieran Smith, the former NZOC boss, into this new role of transformation director. But that was a role that was appointed without any consultation, any formal recruitment process, which was exactly the type of behaviour the report authors were talking about as needing to change within New Zealand sport. And there wasn't really an acknowledgement from that. So I think that has frustrated a lot of people.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? And a shoulder tap, and what? She's going to sit on the board as well? Is she just there to, well, to do what? I mean, do you know what came out from the report? And you highlighted it in one of your articles earlier in the week from Mike Heron doing a second report, having written the first report, which is that you can have all the policies in place. You can tick all the boxes that the report told you to do. You can move certain people on, but that will not guarantee change all the way down, root and branch, to what happens on the ground. And does that remain the challenge, bringing in Kieran Smith to do what? Be the point person who's going to chase up on whether promises are translated into real change?
Yeah, from what I understand, her remit will be to sort of drive through these urgent changes that are needed and make sure that these recommendations are acted upon. But again, you know, we see time and time again this kind of misalignment between policy and actions and behaviours. And we saw that again from the top brass on Monday. Another example being Raylene Castle, sort of every time that people were questioning her organisation's commitment to change and whether they're prepared to really look at the recommendations, because there were some quite radical recommendations suggested. She pointed to the new strategy that was launched last year as being, you know, already addressing the problems that this report has raised. But the report made quite clear that they view that new strategy as being insufficient and many of the new wellbeing measures not going far enough. So I think that's where a lot of the frustration stems from. You know, what is needed is transformative change, and they're already looking to the same people within the industry that have, you know, presided over this period where we've had so many problems as being the answers. And one source sort of suggested, you know, why aren't they looking to the social services sector or the education sector to resolve some of this? That would be, you know, if they'd recruited more broadly, they could have had some more ideas, some more diversity come in.
It was interesting just listening to some of the reaction. Eric Murray, who, and this was from an athlete's voice, and also to state the obvious, a male athlete's voice, right, and not for a moment minimising the pressures, the stresses and the bullying and the bad behaviours that come on all athletes. But there was one part of the story that was perhaps particular to athletes being female, as you recall well from the first hearing report. And he was saying, look, you can't get into a situation where you're not pushing people, where medals don't matter, where there are not those with the skills to really drive elite performance. But you have to somehow build in the people skills, the mental health management skills. He actually made an interesting point that a large part of the stresses on the cyclists, from his own observations and conversations, was just this kind of black box as to why people were being picked. People didn't know what people's individual results were, or the relevant data were. You went to the top brass and they just said, that's for us, not for you. And that can create its own kind of mental stresses for an athlete. Or you might be in one form of race within your individual sport, but wanting to know what it takes to qualify for another. It was an interesting observation. Can you speak to that? Raylene Castle talks the talk. She says it doesn't need to be either or. Athlete care and high performance standards. But they're clearly not travelling very well together in many of our elite sports at the moment.
Yeah, I think there's a broader misconception out there whenever an athlete welfare scandal erupts, is that, you know, a lot of the general public, and you also hear this messaging from some of the senior executives, even at high performance sport, is that, you know, it's high performance sport. Someone has to win or lose, and you know, hard work and grit and training hard is part of the job. And it is. And I've never heard an athlete complain about the training being too hard. You know, when these sorts of bullying incidents erupts, like the kind of common themes we hear time and time again are things like no accountability, no transparency. They don't know what they have to do to qualify. They feel like if they step out of line and question their coach or a high performance director on their logic or reasoning, then that will automatically mean they won't be looked at for selection. That's just this real power imbalance. Like, a lot of the issues in this report stem back to that sense of entitlement from high performance directors and coaches having all power, and the athletes basically not being treated as human. Again, we keep reading in reports, athletes need to be treated as humans first, and it just seems staggering that in 2022 we're still reading lines like that.
It is. Let's talk about the sports integrity body, because this is the other thing. Where do you go? And, okay, I heard about three steps towards where you could go to get to a mediation process if you're an elite athlete in an individual sport. And I'm thinking, how likely is that when you're under stress, you're not being heard within your own organisation, or you fear you won't be and you fear recriminations? How likely is it that you're going to go to another body somewhere else? Like, what is the solution when there are egregious breaches of protocol? And we heard at least two examples from Cycling New Zealand's last two reports. Where is the place for especially individual athletes to go? They don't have a big rugby players association or cricket players association. What's the solution?
Yeah, these are kind of two things that were raised in the report as the, dysfunctional risk escalation procedures within sport and athletes not knowing where, feeling like they don't have an independent avenue to go through to in order to get their issues heard, and not having an independent voice in terms of like an athlete's representative. So what I understand is what's been looked at as a new sports integrity body, similar to what's now currently operating in Australia and at Sports Integrity Australia, which is basically independent, and that's the key thing, that will be independent from Sport New Zealand and High Performance Sport New Zealand, and will have, I guess, investigatory powers to be able to look into athlete welfare concerns. It will mean a major shift of the current framework, and potentially even folding in Drug-Free Sport New Zealand's operations in terms of looking into anti-doping issues, as well as things like match fixing and other integrity breaches. So I think that will be a huge step in the right direction. But again, this is something that's been called for a number of years, and there has been work going on behind the scenes, but there's a lot of frustration that has taken this long to get to this point.
I think you hit on something with the governance issues earlier. Governance issues aren't about having been in cycling all your life, having been a former athlete, having been a coach, having been an administrator, having been the parent of a kid who cycles, all the stuff that can become very, very in-house in any sport. Good governance is about understanding all the steps and procedures and accountability involved in running a healthy organisation. And is it just the case that some of these sports, their boards are too narrow, all inherited from the sport, and without the skill set?
Yeah, I mean, there are some really good people on these boards. It's just that whether they feel empowered enough to challenge high performance directors and coaches on their decision making, or whether they feel like that's not their job. And it absolutely is, because all these athlete welfare issues have stemmed from basically behaviours of coaches and high performance directors and not following, you know, the procedures that have been put in place from board level. So I think there are the right people there. It's just whether their processes are correct and whether there's enough kind of emphasis put on the high performance operations, because obviously these organisations rule over their sports from grassroots level right up to high performance, but maybe the I guess representation on the board is not so that it looks at enough at the high performance area, when really that is a key function of the organisation. I mean, I don't think Cycling New Zealand would exist without High Performance New Zealand's funding.
All right, let's look at, well, athlete selection due about now for the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, they've just named the Athletics New Zealand's team for the Commonwealth Games. Obviously, Birmingham is fast bearing down upon us, and there's been a flurry of selection announcement recently. But there's been a lot of interest in this athletics selection because Athletics New Zealand set this really, really strict selection criteria, and there were concerns that they'd set quite an unrealistic standard for some of the events based on the NZOC's criteria, additional criteria of needing to be capable of a top six performance. And the big concern was that, you know, some of our top performing sprinters, and in particular Zoe Hobbs, who is the best female sprinter New Zealand has ever seen. She's broken the New Zealand record about three or four times already this season, and had some incredible performances. So she has been named in the team. She only met the B selection criteria on one occasion, and if you you need to meet it twice. So it looks like there has been a little bit of bending of the criteria for Hobbs. And I understand they looked at her performance at the World Indoor Champs over the 60-metre distance. She set the Oceania record. And she also went under the B standard on a couple of other occasions, but they were deemed to be wind-assisted. So they've looked at those performances as well, which is good to see, because it would have been an absolute travesty if she wasn't in there. Another name that sticks out is Tori Peters, the women's javelin thrower who missed out on Tokyo last year despite having met the qualifying criteria. She was another incredibly unlucky athlete, so it's good to see her in the mix. And three women's hammer throwers. Suddenly we're a world power in hammer throwing.
Fantastic. We've had the shot put nailed for a while. Let's move to another field sport.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a team that's absolutely dominated by throws. We've got, obviously, a number of shot putters. We've got three hammer throwers, a javelin thrower, a discus thrower. So, yeah, it's good to see.
It's starting to sound like some kind of joke, isn't it? They all walk into a bar. What happens? A lot of respect, I imagine. Hey, speaking of which, a lot of respect to the Blues. You know, season after season of woes, they're having a blinder.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people wondered whether last year they had a good season in that Trans-Tasman Super Rugby competition, but people wondered whether it was a bit of a fluke maybe, given that it was, you know, heavily disrupted and there were questions over the strength of those Australian teams. But yeah, they're flying high on the top of the table again, and they are on the verge of a franchise record of 12 wins in a row. So if they beat the Brumbies tonight, then they will beat their franchise record, and that's even going back to the glory days of the early 2000s when they were, you know, an indomitable force. So, yeah, they're the favourites now
Canberra
for the
tonight.
Title.
Yeah, go on, do it. Thanks absolutely. So much, Dana Johansson, Stuff's national correspondent specialising in sport.